Today, if you happen to know when all hell breaks loose, the Antichrist takes over Earth, and Earth implodes, and all humanity ceases to exist, then you, sir, have enabled auto-CQ mode on WSJTX-Z. Yep, tonight we are going to talk about digital modes next on Live Free and Ham. Hello and welcome to Live Free and Ham podcast. This is our bi-weekly show where during we discuss all ham radio topics in New Hampshire, New England, and beyond. So whether you're a regular listener or a first-time guest, we're excited to have you here and appreciate your support. And thanks for tuning into the show tonight. So let's get into the show. I'm your host, Eric, call sign N1JUR, and I'm with my co-hosts.
Paul, N1OG.
And Todd, W1STJ.
All right, cool. Well, before we usually get into our topic tonight, we want to catch up on a few things. As always, our storefront is up and running, and you can visit that at livefreeandham.com/shop. And I want to do a couple of things. First and foremost, we thank everybody who's gone over to the shop and picked some up swag and merch for us. As always, we appreciate it, everybody. And I want to point out this time, and I'm actually wearing it and sporting it. This is our Digital Life shirt. I wish I could have a back camera. I could probably spin around, but this is the original digital modes FT, what we call CW, but we also refer to it as manual FT8. Either way, you could pick that shirt up, and we have a new shirt that I just put in the store called "I Speak Many Languages," and those languages are Quancheng, Zaigu, Baofeng, and TID. So you can pick that shirt up if you're a big Chinese radio fan, in our store anytime. And so with that, again, we are ramping up for our July live stream, working out some details on that. So stay tuned. So you're going to want to make sure, if you aren't already subscribed to our YouTube channel, that you head on over there at youtube.com/@livefreeandham. And make sure you subscribe and ding that bell, and you'll be notified when we go live. And as always, we've got a little bit of our usual segments. So, and once we dive in here,
doing good,
good,
doing good.
You do, that's good.
Do good, do good.
You're doing good.
Good, good, good. Good.
Absolutely, I do. Good, good.
Doing good, Bob. Doing real good.
And right now, my only outlet is my ham radio.
That is truly it, my friend. So again, we are doing our Do Good segment. And once again, I am sad. There was zero emails in our inbox. There was nothing posted to any of our, reviews. There's apparently no good happening at all. And I'm just sad. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but in essence, apparently all clubs just don't do good.
No one's doing good.
not in New England, and not apparently in the United States. But there is hope. If you happen to know a club that's doing good, or maybe you're a part of something and you want to spread the love, please just send an email to livefreeandham@gmail.com and let us know what's going on, and we'll share it with everybody in our family and community, because why not? Let's start raising up the good stuff. I mean, I'm listening to Ham Radio Clubhouse, not Ham Radio Clubhouse, HRCC, and they want to do a segment on all of the lids and everything. And I'm like, dude, I want something positive. So, let them go down that road. But, if you got something good coming on, please, share it with us. We want to spread the love. We want to, promote the hobby, and just show, how awesome things are in the hobby, because there's always always bad stuff going on. So let's just steer clear of that.
Yeah, all right, I got something good for you.
Go, shoot. Good. Awesome. Then where's yours, my friend?
All right. So I missed out on it this morning. But the Flag and Torch Society is a military and veteran amateur radio club. And they had a testing session. It was hybrid, so it was half online and half in person. Mm-hmm. But it was the Fort Eisenhower ham testing session. 52 soldiers tested. 41 passed, including 3 that upgraded to general.
Oh, awesome.
Nice.
That is awesome. Sweet. Woohoo. I need some sounds here, and I don't have them staged up. Oh, man. That is a bummer. The bummer on the sounds there, but way awesome to hear. So that is totally cool. You know, we'll leave those links if you got links to Flag and Torch there, just so you can go over and support them and show some love. But that is awesome. It is true. It is not a lie that there is some good stuff going on.
Yeah, just nobody wants to brag about it, I guess.
Apparently. All right. Well, as always, you know, like I said, if you've got some stories exactly like Paul shared, then head on over to your email inbox and send us an email at livefreeandham@gmail.com. And we will be sure to showcase it on our next show of doing good. And, you know, we're going to put a little pin on it. It is summertime right now. And as we're recording this episode, you know, we're going to take a little bit of a break there with a little something extra. Todd has, you know, gotten wrapped up in a build out process and enjoying his summer. So he's put a little bit of a break there on studying, but he has promised the crew here that he'll pick it back up in September and go full force with the hope, anticipation that before April, as you know, HRC and other groups start testing for their extras and upgrades, that he will be ready for getting testing. So you heard it here first, and you know, we're gonna hold it to him. All right. Well, with that, so let's just get into our usual format. As I always ask all of our hosts here, you know, what's been going on in your ham radio week, Paul? So go ahead and start us off.
Well, my ham radio week has been non-existent. I did not get a chance to play with the radio at all this week. I spent most of my time working on the boat. It's so close. So I'm done with all of my electrical, all of my wiring, all of my lights, everything. I'm having some issues with the primary motor and the secondary motor. But we'll get those wrapped up here this week and hopefully get her in the water. But then I was doing a walk around the boat, and I was showing my father-in-law this evening, because the boat was his and he gave it to me graciously. But I didn't realize that I had taken one of the sets of controls out because I needed to wire in some switches. And so when I remounted it, he had 6-inch lags securing this thing in, and I didn't realize I drove one of those 6-inch lags right straight through the hull.
Oh,
I've got 2 inches of lag sticking out of the bottom of the hull of the boat, and I'll have to fix that.
Better catch it now than when you're actually on the water.
Yeah, exactly.
We got 14300. Mayday, I'm on my ham radio.
Mayday. I'm sinking.
I put a ham radio in just for this occasion.
Man, that would have made video gold, man. Video, the first maiden voyage. Paul's calling on HF.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Sorry to hear about the hole there in the boat, but definitely sounds like it's manageable and fixable. And I totally understand the HF stuff. You know, sometimes we just get busy with other, you know, projects. And as we all know, once you get down the rabbit hole, it's always hard to get back up out of it. So good on that. Well, with that, Todd, as always, you know, how is your ham radio week been and what's been going on?
Well, it's been all right. I got to multitask. I got 3 things done at the same time. Took my son fishing with his friend. I played ham radio, and while I was activating in park, I listened and somewhat joined into the club meeting via Zoom. So it's pretty awesome. Never did that before, but I got to listen to Eric's presentation on how field day went for our club. So I was like, I didn't hear that one, but I was too busy making contacts. Was working the rail trail, working on the kilo. Great night, 20 meters. I got a lot of Europe, Sweden. Hadn't had a Sweden contact in a while. So worked Sweden, a lot of Georgia, Texas, you know, the usual. And I made like 63 or 64 contacts. And I think I'm at 739 and Eric's at like 730. Mm-hmm. So we're right neck and neck, and we are definitely trying to get all tied up so we can do a live stream and show you guys what it's like to do a kilo at the same time, because we've been working on this for a while, and we just got to get it put behind us. I hadn't been to that park since May. I was like, it's been since that long? I'm like, you got to be kidding me. 2 months?
I'm with you there, man. I've done the last POTA activation I think I did was a big flop. It wasn't a flop in terms of contacts. I definitely made the contacts, but it was one of the technical recordings I did that everything went wrong when it could, and so never really aired. So it's all right.
Well, the other reason I'm starting to really like this park is like Zach likes to fish. So there's a pond right where I activate. A lot of good fishing in there.
All right, well, so I guess with me, I didn't have any fishing escapades to talk about, and definitely no holes in boats, although I'm beginning to think we're going to start into a fishing podcast soon at the rate we're going. I ended up not like you, well, sort of like yourselves. I didn't get a chance to play a whole lot on radio. Work has just been nonstop and a lot of driving, so I think what I ended up doing was the IARU contest was this past Friday, Saturday, and I was just, kind of doing some other stuff. And when I took a look at the Flex waterfall, I was blown away how freaking busy 20 was. And as I was telling the guys earlier offline, literally in the 15 minutes that I spent making contacts, I had every, about 20, 25 in about 15 minutes, ranging from Slovenia all the way to Austria, to Belgium and Europe. And I mean, Europe into Europe was like a clear pipeline. And, you could literally spend the dial of, one, two hertz in some cases up, and you'd be, onto the next contact. So that was always at least fun to play a little radio. Although I'm sure the family upstairs would, have something different to say, because all they kept hearing was N1JUR, November 1J, over and over again, because I had my headphones on. So that's all they heard me yelling, 5-9 and then my, section number or something. But it was fun. It was good to play a little contest radio and even for a short time. So that was good. And as Todd alluded to, I too have to go back to Rail Trail and make a couple more contacts so we can get, at least past the 850 mark. I mean, we've been at 7-something, or I've been at 7-something for probably a good, 5-6 months now at this point. So we've got to wrap that up and make, good on getting that dual kilo before September. Although I don't want to set a date, because we tried to do that before and it blew up in our face. So we're going to hold off on that one. But all good on that. So I guess with that, let's kind of roll into our discussion tonight. We're going to talk digital modes. I mean, we're going to obviously talk about, we alluded to FT8 in the very beginning there. We will definitely dive into some of the other areas, and really tonight is just kind of, if you've never dealt with digital modes, you've never kind of dabbled in it or played with it, we're just going to give you our firsthand opinions of, some of those modes like JS8 call and FT8 and FT4 and using Whisper, and then, talk a little bit about some of our experiences with it, all with the intention that, if you've never played in those modes, you never kind of fooled around with them, we're going to encourage you to kind of go, try it out. I mean, in essence, ignore the naysayers, ignore the folks that, play, in that space and we're like, it's boring. It's like watching paint dry. It's two computers talking to each other. Yeah, it is. I mean, all of those negatives, but it is radio. I mean, in essence, it's just another form. And so if you look at it like that, dabble in it, you might find that, you might get something good out of it. But at the same time, you also might realize that, in the times when the band conditions are crap, FT8 or any of those other modes in digital world are going to come out shining, because they just do their job more efficiently than a voice ever could carry across the airwaves. So with that, let's kind of start somewhere and talk a little bit about it. Now, just as a kind of level set, all you guys have played in some of the form of digital modes, meaning FT8, JSA call, those types of modes, right?
Yes.
Okay. I admitted to being a serial digital operator.
You did very early on. I was going to say, if you didn't admit to it now, I had the track ready to play in the background saying that was all you were going to do. But, you beat me to the punch, so I'm glad you admitted to it. So we all had some experience at some level. We obviously know, I think, in terms of the digital, and let's kind of just do a little high-level set. When you're dealing with digital modes, it's an interface of your computer through some method of a USB or serial cable to a radio to then convert your audio or the audio being generated in your computer out to the, you know, over RF. And, you know, another computer over there intercepts that information and then translates it and turns it into this conversation. And that conversation, I think, can look like a couple different ways. And so if we just kind of elaborate, at least there's the keyboard to keyboard version, right? And that's like the JSA call, right, Paul?
Yeah, JSA call or Vera AC or any number of modes in FLDigi.
Okay. All right. And then we've got the next kind of step, which is the more popular one, which is really like kind of that FT8, FT4 stuff, where a lot of it's kind of scripted. Well, we'll say scripted.
Pre-canned.
Pre-canned, you know, and very controlled in terms of the messaging that's being sent between stations. And a lot of times it's just, you know, signal report, grid square, and maybe one other, you know, component depending on what type of the message is. But it's very controlled in that nature, which I think, you know, to touch upon those folks that complain about the hop, you know, the mode being so dry, is that it doesn't allow them to converse anything more than, you know, a small subset of characters. So I think that's kind of where people just go, well, that's just slow, or, you know, boring or whatever. And so, okay. So let's kind of so, you know, Todd, actually you're probably a good candidate to kind of talk about this. So we obviously dragged you into the digital modes once you finally got your, you know, DX10 and whatnot. You know, what was your experience in kind of dealing with them? You know, how did you feel when you first, like, it was thrown at you? You know, talk a little bit about those feelings, and then we can talk a little bit about some of the technical challenges you kind of dealt with.
At first, when I, you know, I heard you guys talking about FT8 and all, and I just didn't understand it. I was like, I don't get what's the point of it. Like I hit a button and it just does it by itself. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I said, oh, okay, cool. I made a contact of that. Now, when I really got into it and when I started to understand is when we used to play that FT8 off.
Oh, right.
And then we had to like get as many contacts. And if you used, you know, QRP, you got more points. And then, you know, I started to learn, and then it became really fun for me. And then they got rid of FT8 off. Is that what it was called? FT8 off or something?
Yeah.
And then they got rid of it. And I was like, damn, that was like, I was like on Thursday nights. I looked forward to that. I thought it was fun. And like, I think like one time I was in the top 10, so I was pretty psyched.
Let's just touch upon that real quick. So FT8 off was something invented by, and I can't quite recall, it was TO and a couple of other guys that, was it on TO's stream? I can't remember if it was Toads or something.
Yeah, I think it was Toads.
Okay. So they created this kind of, we'll say a little pokerish like, but it really wasn't. It was just a scoreboard that they built that you could, you know, pipe your contact information from your WSJTX to this website, and you can compete against points. And it tabulated all this like kind of like real time leaderboard. And so they'd play for an hour, and you'd get to, you know, make contacts. And for each level of contact, you got a different point score, whether it was more power or whatever. And it was very simple, and it was really cool because it was fun to be able to play with. But then, you know, the reason why it went south fast was just a lot of people were start, you know, being jerks, and they, you know, they weren't being honest with the process. And they were saying, you know, when you're putting in your power rating, you know, if you put in a lower power rating, all it was just a text field. So the system would take whatever value you wanted. So, you know, you could say, oh, I was running QRP when you're really running 100 watts. And they could never tell. You just can't. I mean, obviously, unless they were like in the vicinity and they were like, well, why am I making contacts with
someone? Yeah, but I think they got pissed because someone like did a whole log, like 1,000 contacts, and you only had an hour to do it. And then they uploaded the log, and it was like, oh, that you know, they won by, you know, a ridiculous amount of things. And, you know, I thought they got a little, they got pissed, and they just said they shut it down. And like I said, I get how they would be upset, but when it was going and people weren't really cheating, it was just fun. It was cool. They had a live stream going on, so you could be in the chat and you could, you know, you know, live stream doing it. And we used to do it, I think through the phone, right? Through Ham Radio Hotline. We would all be on, like, our club members, and we'd see what was going on. So yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, it was. Now that you say that, it kind of inspired, I think, a lot of us to kind of really pick the digital mode up and, try it a lot more and be, you know, a little bit deeper dive in it. I know, you know, we kind of spurred off once that went south. I tried to bring up FT8 bingo, and that, you know, that worked out pretty well, and that was pretty fun to do. And you know, we'll probably have to do that again in the summer, in the fall winter time frame when we did it, you know, last, because everyone's now asking in our club to go do it again, so we might have to try that another attempt there.
And we could live stream it too.
We could, and we probably should, just as a fun.
Yeah. Real quick, the other thing that I think Paul, you're the one who, it was either you or Ryan, I think it was you who texted me one evening, and they're like, Antarctica is on FT8 on 20 meters. Was that you? Right. I thought it was you. And I'm like, Antarctica. I'm like, oh, so yeah. I ran and down.
It was a Japan station in Antarctica.
Right.
Oh, wow. Yep.
And I ran down to my shack, turned on the computer, got on FT8, and saw him out there and went for it and got him. And so he's my Antarctica. Contact, and that gives me some kind of contact on every continent. So I thought that was pretty cool. And I tell people, like, yeah, I've used my ham radio to communicate with Antarctica. They're like, what? So
okay, well, so that a good fair experience, you know. I think a lot of us share that. So Paul, kind of what's your been experience when you, I mean, obviously you were destined to be a serial digital operator, but that obviously changed a little bit and you saw the light. But you know, what led you down that road and why, and you know, what kind of inspired you to get your setup going and dive into those modes?
Well, so my first HF radio was the ICOM 706 Mark IIG. And it came with a signal link. So it was already ready to go, interface with a computer. So that it was really easy to get on digital modes, and I was inexperienced and I had, a lot of, mic shyness, if you will. I didn't feel comfortable getting behind a mic and giving my call sign and, you know, trying to break through pileups and all of that. And so, you know, I did nothing but digital for probably the first 18 months that I was a ham. A lot of FT8. You know, FT8 is yes, it's limited information, right? It's your grid square, it's your call sign, it's a signal report, and that's the end of the QSO.
Right.
However, like, you can rack up a lot of contacts with, you know, foreign, you know, countries and different, you know, grid squares, and you know, so I started chasing like new U.S. counties, right? And using Grid Tracker, right? Grid Tracker is a fantastic company software to WSJTX. And I would use Grid Tracker to monitor, like, all right, well, I don't have these counties and I don't have these grids. And that's all I did. I was just chasing grids and counties and it gives you something to do where you're playing with the radio.
Right.
But, you know, like if you were like I was and you're, you know, you don't want to get behind the mic, you know, it allows you to get a lot of contacts in a lot of different places that you probably wouldn't normally get single sideband anyway.
Right. Yeah. It's a big struggle. I'd say for, including myself being in an HOA where I have one antenna, I am a very limited in who I can hear and what I can hear. And I'm very happy that what I have, I can hear pretty good, but I'm sure when it came to like a lot of these DX stations and stuff that, you know, or expeditions that I could, you know, and I know I can't hear or I can't pick up, or they're just too far in the noise floor that I have here at the house. My noise floor is like a 4 or 5. So it's not terribly bad, but it's still bad enough that you can't pull something out, and I can't set up multiple antennas. So I don't have the luxury of being able to make all that. So, you know, that is the draw for FT8, minus the fact that I love the component from the computer standpoint of being able to, you know, just have one more thing that was integrated more into my logging and all that stuff. So it just really made it, you know, that more, you know, unified. And I was like, oh, this is really cool. I love it. I don't care. You know, I have a short attention span a lot of times. So like, even when I do sideband, it's like, I don't rag chew a lot. Like when I hear somebody and I make a contact, it's usually 5-9 and a couple of passing words, and then boom, we're off to the next thing, because you know, and so my digital life is a lot like that too, as well. And it doesn't inspire me, and I haven't moved myself towards like things like, you know, JSA call where it's keyboard to keyboard and stuff. And we'll touch upon that in a second, because I want to take Paul's, you know, feedback on what he's done, because he's done a lot more of that than the Todd and I have. But have you guys really, you know, really embraced like the whole digital side? Have you done just FT8 only, or have you gotten into the other modes and other functionality that's in, say, WSJTX at all?
I've really done very little FT4 just because I wanted to try it out, and mainly just FT8. And I'll be honest with you, I've really been focusing on POTA, I haven't really done a lot of FT8 lately. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to get bored, or, you know, I was in the car waiting for something, I'd pull up in my phone and start doing some FT8. Yeah. But I haven't really sat down. I'm a sideband guy. I like to talk to people. I like to make the contact voice to voice. Yeah. But I'm not I don't dislike FT8. I just said it's kind of like when I was working at home, I did a lot of FT8 because I would be working at home and I'd be doing FT8. It's a lot easier to do FT8 and work at home.
Or do the overnights and do FT8.
Yeah. But now that I have the flex radio, when I do the overnights, I can do sideband too.
Right. Uh-huh. Exactly. So, all right. Well, so let's kind of touch on it. We obviously keep dancing around it a little bit. So I'm going to throw the floor over to Paul there, and he's going to, you know, kind of get elaborate a little bit on the JSA call stuff and kind of try to explain it just as a kind of a little primer, and then, you know, what your feelings on FL2G and all that other stuff. And you know, then we can kind of go from there.
Sure. Well, so with JSA call specifically, there's a lot of people that you'll find that are, they'll only do heartbeats and acknowledgments. Mm-hmm. And then it's frustrating to a point, because it's like, I know you're there, you know, like your computer just told me that you're there, you know, but then you send a CQ out and then nobody answers. So it does get frustrating, but it is nice when, like, you know, you get Finland, right? I'm always trying to get to OH8STN. He's a phenomenal YouTuber. He does a lot of great off-grid stuff. It's just fantastic, and so I've always wanted to get him on JS8 call, because I know that's one of his favorite modes. But you know, I've gotten other Finland stations, and it's nice to be able to have that kind of keyboard to keyboard, you know, exchange where, you know, the signal probably isn't strong enough that, you know, you could carry on a sideband conversation. But the digital is able to get through. It's a live text kind of deal. You can opt to not have it say I'm typing while you're typing, or you can have it actually say I'm typing, which is kind of a neat, yeah, it's kind of a neat little feature though, you know, like if the other person is typing and they have that on, it'll show on your screen. It'll say, you know, so-and-so is typing. Mm-hmm. Vera AC is another great keyboard to keyboard, where you know, it's along the same lines, where you send out a CQ and people will respond or not respond, but you'll at least get signal reports, you know, when you ask for them, when you put that out there. It's just you're having a conversation typing instead of talking. That's the only difference.
I was going to say, in your experience with setting it up and kind of tweaking it, did you find it was relatively the same on par with WSJTX in terms of getting all that working, or a little bit more challenging or different, or both?
I would say JSA call is easier to set up and get running than WSJTX is. I had a lot of issues initially with like just things interacting weird with each other, audio card issues and whatnot. Mm-hmm. You know, but you anything digital, I mean, you're gonna have to suss those issues out anyways. you know, making sure that your audio levels are right. Like, you'll have to open your sound settings in Windows, assuming you're using Windows. You know, but you have to adjust the audio levels in Windows. Otherwise, you'll be overdriving the input, or you're overdriving into the computer. You know, but it's not super, super difficult. I would say probably the most difficult bit of digital software to get set up would be FL Digi. And that's just because it can do so much. There are so many different modes that FL Digi does. And having your macros at the top, it just makes life a lot easier. And so it takes a bit of a learning curve to get through setting up the macros in FL Digi and understanding, you know, okay, well, you know, if I'm going to take part in a Contestia net, you know, what is the exact Contestia mode? Because there are several. and you know, and then you just wait your turn, and you know, you chime in when you chime in, you say, okay, yep, I'm here to check in. And it's you can have a lot of fun with it.
So in terms of the mode itself, or all of those modes you mentioned, how they stack up in comparison to, like, FD8 tends to be like, what, a minute and a half or so for a full end-to-end QSO, or a little bit shy of 2 minutes. How is that in the whole, you know, other modes and digital modes? You find that it's just a lot longer because it's more manual kind of keyboard type stuff, or is it about equal, or, you know, or something in the middle?
Yeah, it varies. Obviously, so I want to say that both JS8 and Vera are 15-second windows, right, where you'll transmit. But so if you've got a long bit of text, what it'll do is it'll transmit your 15 seconds, and it'll wait for the acknowledgement, and then it'll continue. It'll wait for the acknowledgement, and then it'll continue, right, until it gets to the end. And so it does take a little bit longer, I guess. I call FT8 now my lazy radio. It's what I do when I'm multitasking, right? So if I'm on a voice chat in a Discord server, I'll have FT8 going in the background, and you know, I'll just, yeah, all right. You know, enable TX to send the CQ, and then I'll get the pop-up dialogue when the QSO is complete, and I know that I got to go back into the app and hit enable TX again, right? And it's nice that you can just kind of run it in the background. You don't have to babysit it so much. Whereas the keyboard to keyboard modes, like, you have to be, you've got to be right there on it. Otherwise, the other person's going to be sitting there, and they'll be like, why hasn't he responded yet?
20 years later, I'm still on the QSO with Paul.
Like, oh, I'm sorry. I was chatting with, you know, the people at Discord, and then I went and took a pee break, and
I had a podcast to do.
I know, right? I went to go get my colonoscopy. It took a really long time.
No, well, I will say, because we are talking like digital, you can't forget to mention Winlink, because Winlink is that's one of those that, it's not a super popular mode, I guess, but it's functional, and I believe that there is a use for it, especially if there was ever a situation where the internet went down, right? Because you don't need internet to do Winlink, right? It's email over HF. And so as long as the other computer is receiving your signal, it's all a store and forward kind of deal. And so it's a nice thing to know how to use.
Right. Yeah. And we could definitely go into a long length. And I think one of the things that might be worthwhile sometime is to bring on some of the Ardent and Aries guys, that they, you know, they use that heavily, and it's a great tool for that. And, you know, they promote it very much from an MCOM standpoint. So I've dabbled a little on Winlink, but I'll say I cheated and didn't really do it over HF, did it over Telnet. And so we won't discuss that and the reasons why I did or didn't, but I haven't really gone back and then fooled around with Winlink itself. How about you, Todd? Any of those modes you've gotten into?
Nope. I haven't even looked at it. I heard of them, but never really got into it.
Well, so then let's kind of circle back a little bit on some of the we'll talk. We did mention some pitfalls and stuff like that, but I think we can kind of help correct some of those components a little bit in terms of helping you along and where to kind of look. But one of the things I want to talk about that is very, you know, and as every other point in this hobby, there's always some controversial side of things. And Paul sort of alluded to it. And I alluded to it at the very beginning that, you know, if everyone remembers, you know, what I read about the world coming to an end, so forth and so on, the lovely, you know, forked developers who probably helped contribute, obviously, to writing WSJTX also wrote a what they call a Z component of WSJTX. And I always get flack when I say I used it, so I don't tell anybody I use WSJTX or I don't put the Z at the end any longer. But those that know, you can download it. It's the same version as WSJTX. Does a lot of the basic features. Wait, let's get to the positives on that one. So WSJTXZ is an automation tool. Like literally, like if you love automation, then you need to just skip over WSJTX and go to the Z version. Primarily because they have auto modes. They have a lot of capabilities that allow for, you know, we'll say automation of making or trying to get contacts. So one feature I truly love in WSJTXZ is that if I'm looking for, I'm trying to hunt a specific call sign, I can just go into the tool and fill in a field and say, I'm looking for this call sign because I know they're popping up on the either the cluster or whatever, and they're doing FT8. And WSJTX will watch for it in the decodes and keep watching. And then when it finds it and if there's an opening, it'll automatically start the contact for me and go through the whole exchange. And then when it's done, log it. And done. And then, you know, it's finished. Or, you know, if I'm fooling around with the auto CQ that Paul alluded to, that method is you don't really have to hit the TX button with that one. You just click the button and you can literally walk away. Guilty. I walked away for 5 hours and I had come back and my log was like full. And I'm like, what happened? And I realized, oh crap, I left auto CQ on and it was just kind of logging. Whoever heard me was just like, yep, I'll grab you. No problem. And just kept going and going. And, you know, I think I literally worked overnight and made like 50, 55 plus calls. I mean, because I forgot. And you know, I obviously didn't learn my lesson the first time because I did it two other more times before. So like as Paul said, it can fill up your log fast, you know, and you don't know how quickly it does it until it does it. There's a lot of cool features in WSJTXZ that help in automation and is a great tool. And, you know, you decide for your own, personal choice as to whether or not you feel comfortable in using a tool like that or, you know, you'd rather, you know, be with the regular, folks in the regular JTX world. So all good there. But I assume you probably have a couple of, you know, fun features that you used in it that, you know, you might want to elaborate on.
Yeah. So my favorite two features of the Z mod is Pounce, which is what you referred to, right? Where, you know, you see somebody in the decode and they could be making a QSO with somebody else, but it shows up as like a different color because it's somebody that you want.
Yep.
And you right click on the decode and you go Pounce. And the next time that they say 7-3 or they call CQ, it'll automatically jump on them for you. That is fantastic. The other cool feature of the Z mod that the regular doesn't have is the auto find the opening, right? And so sometimes like wherever you are in the spectrum scope, it fills up quick and everybody's kind of on top of everybody. And so you might lose kind of where you're at. Where there's somebody else that's just blasting on top of you, and now the people that could hear you can no longer hear you. You click that auto, and it just finds the holes for you. And every time you click it, it'll move to a new hole, and so you can watch across and you go, okay, yep, that's a good hole, and I'll stick with that. And then you just hold your TX frequency from there and go. So those are my two favorite features of the Z mod.
Yeah, I love the fact that it's got built in like QRZ search and stuff like that. Todd, I think we got you to download and install it.
Yeah, I did. I like the Pounce mode. That's the Pounce feature. That's a That works pretty well. Pretty well.
Yeah, it's definitely a great feature and great functionality, and they keep, you know, evolving it lockstep with, I think, regular WSJTXZ. So, you know, if you know, you haven't tried it, go ahead and install it. You're not going to miss much, and you won't lose any functionality if you decide to downgrade it to the regular, you know, normal version. But, you know.
You know, the other thing too, like with FT8 and the digital modes, if the band, the sideband, if the bands are dead or there's a lot of noise or solar storms, flares, whatever, and it's not working, like you just like there's no one on because it's just, the bands are crappy. FT8 works.
Yeah.
I mean, you can make good contact. So I've used it a lot where I've like really had the urge to get on the radio and do something, and there's nothing on the waterfall and everything you hear is staticky and whatever. So I'll switch over to FT8, and then all of a sudden you'll see a lot of activity. And then, you know, you're still playing radio, but you're getting through that noise. You know, the digital is and the computers are able to weed through that and hear you. And then you start making contact. So it can be fun, like in that sense. But like I said, for me, if you like the bands, there's just people talking, and I see, I'm gonna jump on that. But Yeah, I mean, I haven't done it on POTA yet, but I do. When I do FT8, anyone that says CQ POTA, I always jump on those guys. And those guys will hit you like more than once. So like a lot of times if you worked like a guy on, in my experience, if you work someone on FT8, they're not going to answer you because they're looking for new contacts, right? The POTA guys will pick you up anytime because they're just looking to activate their park.
On as many contacts as they can get. Yeah.
So I always jump on the POTA guys and try to make sure that they get their contacts in. So
very cool. Well, that's definitely a good tip there because I subscribe the same way. But anytime I see, I use a kind of a helper app, and actually, Paul alluded to some of the helper apps like Grid Tracker, and I want to touch on those a little bit. One of the ones I use is JTDX. It's more of a kind of text-based. It's not as, GUI intensive as Grid Tracker is, although Grid Tracker does a lot more than just, POTUS type stuff and or just FTA type stuff. So it does really there. But I needed something a little bit more kind of like quick visuals where I could sort things by like all the things I need. So, you know, if it's going against my log and I'm looking, like Paul said, he was hunting for grid squares, I can filter out, you know, all of the extra noise and just only go for, you know, certain grid squares that I know that the system knows I'm missing or I need. And, or if a special event station or it's an @no for my log, it tells me very quickly in a text flashing idiot sign says, hey, you click on this one, You need to, you need to make a QSO with them. And, you know, it gives me a lot of like quick, easy information from a visual standpoint. But Grid Tracker, we all have used it. I think I uninstalled it, but I haven't played with it in a while. I mean, talk a little bit about, Paul, you obviously mentioned it, but Todd, you use it heavily too as well, right?
Yeah. When I do FT8, I'm on Grid Tracker.
Now, do you like it because of just its visual tech stuff or the visual aspect of it?
I like the visual aspect of it. Some of the other ones, like I watched some of you guys do other ones, I was like, it's kind of like the Apple TV of Apple of, you know, how Apple is just so easy. Like, you know, you just get on it and it just seems to work. It's kind of like the way Grid Tracker is for me.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, that was kind of the one of the things that I already had. And so
I don't know, Paul, what are you, not an Apple guy? All I know is that when
nothing Apple.
Okay. Well, my argument is, you know, when Zach is like 2 and I give him the iPad and he can work the iPad, he can't read, or maybe he's 1, he couldn't talk, he can do it, but he could do that freaking iPad. That tells me it's idiot proof. But I will tell you this. They have not figured out a way for my parents. Like, it's too complicated for them. And I'm just like, what is going on? I go, how can your grandson do it when he was like not even speaking? And you're a grown adult, many years on this earth, you know, been through colleges, schools, worked, retired. Like, you honestly can't figure this thing out. Like, come on.
Come on, man. It's the same reason why, your Minnesota NCO would, basically told you to get off the frequency because they've owned it for 45 years because he's done it that way forever and he's not going to change.
Yeah. Well, that would be them. Yeah. That's the way they are. I mean, you know, on a side note, you know, my mother calls me up. Hey, you have to come fix the printer. We're going on. They don't use digital, what do you call it? Like boarding passes. So they got to print them out. Like, who does that anymore? But they do. My mother's freaking out because she's got to go to she's flying out to see my brother in California and she can't get the printer working. And she can't. And I'm like, Ma, I'm like, all right, I'll come over. I'm like, I got her the simplest printer. It's like you turn it on and it's hooked up to her phone, her computer, cool. and her iPad, and just hit print and it'll go. Right. It's simple as that. She's flipping out. I go over there, I look at the printer, I hit the on button, bzz, there goes all her 30 boarding passes that she's printing. I'm like, Mom, power on will work.
That's a good segue. I mean, we should talk about, like, you know, if you're an older person and you have not delved into the WSJTX world or any of the digital modes because you're just freaked out, it's too hard, you know, find a younger person, either our age or Paul younger. Eric.
No, don't call me. N1OG. They know what they're doing.
Yeah. Definitely don't find someone locally who can go next to you, sit parallel with you, and walk you through all of those components, because I guarantee once they get you set up, they'll spend a little extra time explaining a few things so you know what to do when, you know, the crap hits a fan or something stops working. Because we all know, and Paul's mentioned it, it's like Windows, you're bound to have some stupid sound setting get changed, and you know, all of a sudden the driver for the sound card just goes on the fritz and says, I just had to take a vacation. I'm not working with the radio today. You know, go call somebody else, you know, or whatever, you know, you fill in the blank. So, you know, I guess that's kind of the best thing for advice I'd say is don't try to do it on your own. You will get frustrated. Find someone who's set it up in your club or in an area or on a Discord or something and have them help you out.
And if you have no friends and you have no clubs, there's always YouTube
and Annette. Yeah.
Right. You can pretty much find anything to do on YouTube. I'm just too lazy. I just call Eric. Eric, help me set this up. Why isn't this working? Fix this for me.
You'd pay me in beer. That's the problem.
Yeah. And you know what? And I'm not like, for me, it's just like with my flying hobby. I really hate building airplanes. I hate putting them together. I just like to play with them. Right. I like to fly them just like with ham radio. Like I don't really get into I'll listen to you guys talk about, but I don't all the how to set this up and that. I just want it to be set up and I want to work it. You know, that's me. That's just the way I am. You know, I don't care how it works. It doesn't thrill me to know how it works. I just want it to work.
Making gear.
Yeah, maybe. I just want to operate. Like, you know, like when I was studying for the extras, like I'm like, I could care less about this stuff. I am never, ever, personally, ever going to use any of this because it doesn't interest me and it doesn't affect me from taking my radio, going out to the park, setting up my antenna, and making contacts. Nothing, right? And that's me personally. Like, some guys are really into that, and that's great. I got guys in my flying club that they are, like, they don't care so much for flying. They fly, but their big thing is building, and it's awesome. Build away, have that pride and do it. I love looking at the stuff you're building, but don't give me a kit and say, here, Todd, build this, because it's never getting done, ever. It's not happening.
Take my money.
Yeah. I'll pay someone to build the plane. I tried to get the young kids. I said, hey. Get the young kids in the club that are like all into us. I said, hey, you want to build a kit for me? I'll give you like $50. Really? Yeah, here's the box. Tell me when it's done.
Oh, man. All right. Well, so we didn't allude to it too much. And I obviously we want to just, you know, kind of put some closure to this because we could go down this rabbit hole for hours. You know, any of you guys play with any of the other modes? Because obviously FT8 is a good one, but, you know, you've got like Hellschreiber and a few others, including FT4. I always forget about FT4. I don't know about you, but it's like, I'll be doing FT8 and I'll be like, I've seen the same contacts on the waterfall all the time. And I never think to myself, why don't I always flip over to FT8? It's a faster mode by, like, you know, almost half of what an FT8 contact takes to be able to generate. But yet I still don't, you know, remember to flip over to play with it. You guys do a lot of FT8 at all in any of your, you know, digital stuff? I'm sorry, FT4.
FT4.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, so I've played with FC4. I played with JT65. But I think we're remiss in the fact that we haven't mentioned the most important mode in WSJTX, which is, if I remember correctly, weak signal propagation reporting. Yes.
Yep. WSPR. Yep.
All right.
Wonderful tool. So go ahead, since that was my kind of like cream of my notes here. I wanted to talk about that because it helps for, you know, folks, appliance operators like Todd, and, you know, we'll use it heavily when we do our matchup, when we talk, you know, we do the 80 meter coil head to head, but go ahead. Describe a little bit what Whisper is and why you like to use it.
Well, all right. So, the overall general advantage of any mode in WSJTX is the fact that it's all designed on weak signal. I believe it's minus 22 dB is the bottom threshold there.
Yeah.
But yeah, 100%. You want to know how your antenna is performing, how your setup is performing. You run Whisper. Run Whisper for a couple of minutes and check the PSK reporter and see, you know, all right, well, who's actually hearing me, and, you know, how well am I doing? Yeah. You know, and then if you got an issue with your antenna, it's going to show up right away. If you had an issue with something, it's going to show up right away. And you're going to see it. Yeah. And the nice thing about it is it's visual.
Yeah. Run it a couple of times. Like, I usually do once a month. I do it for probably like a Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And I usually run it overnight and let it just kind of cycle. And, you know, then I'll go back in the morning and I'll take a look at the 6 hour or 8 hour time frame just to see where I'm situated. And then I'll do a comparison by maps over the course of 3 days to see how I play out. And 9 times out of 10, most of the maps are lining up with a few little ads here and there that it might have picked me up. But it shows me where I am per se stronger and weaker in other areas. So, you know, I know I can't hit, the West Coast as well, but I can hit, you know, right down the middle of the United States, down to Florida, and definitely everything over Europe-wise, and even as far as to the other side of South Africa in some cases. So, it's a great visual tool, like Paul said, and you could probably find a boatload of stuff on the YouTubes on how to do it and how to set it up, and we could go into hours on how to tweak it, but it's built right into WSJTX. It's just a little mode that you select from the drop-down under modes, and you're off to the races with a couple of clicks.
Well, and so as you know, because you helped me put my antenna up several times, my primary, which is a big dipole, so the first iteration, it was almost 100% true north-south orientation.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was getting from Whisper was, like, I wasn't hitting the Pacific Northwest or any Northern California hardly at all.
Yep.
You know, through the middle of the U.S. was fantastic. Very, very little to South America. But then Europe was fantastic, right? Especially, Europe to Africa was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Then when the antenna went up for the second time, it shifted, and it was about 5 degrees more towards the northeast to southeast. And all of a sudden, like, the West Coast of the U.S. starts getting better, right? Getting into the Middle East got better. And so the third time the antenna went up, it went up a lot higher, and then it went up, about 15 degrees to the northeast, to southwest. And I don't want to change it. The way that the antenna is set up currently is almost perfect. No issues, especially FT8, into Japan, to China, through all the Middle East. I've got, you know, India and, middle of Russia, no problem. It just fantastic. And it was only because I used Whisper through each iteration of moving the antenna that I was able to see those changes.
Right.
And so, you know, like, it's just something so simple, but it gives you so much information.
Oh, and it's a tool that probably 20 years ago, nobody ever had. So they couldn't, they just had to guess a lot of times. And, you know, based off their log, they could kind of estimate. But I mean, Todd, I mean, you haven't done whisper tests on yours, but I know we've adjusted your antenna twice. And I can only imagine like where, you know, if we did it both on those A-B tests, it would have, you know, given you some more, you know, detail on that stuff.
Yeah, I think I'm going to start. I want to give it a shot because I want to see where I'm going out, especially when I put up my DX Commander. I want to see if it if that helps me getting farther out west. Like I said, I've gotten out west, but it's a lot harder. Like Europe, no problem. I mean, it's like, you know, getting Europe is, for me, you know, from the shack, is it's like any given day. I also get South America very easily. But getting out to like Asia, a little bit more difficult. Middle East, I've only got a few contacts in the Middle East. So, you know, hopefully my vertical will improve at least maybe that. Because I it seems like I get really good. I get farther out west when I'm doing POTA on my POTA antenna than I do with my dipole here in the shack. You know, like I can get Alaska, no problem, when I'm out in the field.
Well, that'll be a really cool test once you get the command, the, your classic up, DX Commander Classic, to see where your coverage, you know, kind of changes by vertical to horizontal.
Yeah, so that, I'm looking forward to that. So yeah, we'll have to play around with that, and I can give you guys a report when that gets done and see how it goes. But like I said, I'm not complaining about my dipole. I mean, it gets great. It's done wonderful. Like I said, like last summer, I got Australia. I couldn't be happier. Who would ever thought I'd get that on 20 meters sideband? Like literally having QSOs with the guys. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. That was awesome. It was probably one of the highlights of my ham radio short career, was being able to have QSOs with guys in New Zealand and Australia. And thought that was pretty awesome.
Nice.
Now, that's the same feeling I had when I got Qatar on sideband.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Those are the contacts, man. Those will be great.
If I can get like King Hussein of Jordan QSO with him, that's going to be a highlight. And if I can get someone in North Korea, you know, could you imagine Little Rocket Man was a ham radio operator? Dude, that would be awesome. I would love to talk to that guy.
Yeah. Never say never, right? Cool. So, yeah, Paul, just question. Have you done those A-B tests with your other, you have another vertical too as well. Have you done that comparisons whisper test with that versus your wire?
Yeah. So the vertical is a Cushcraft R7. And the way that I have is I have both antennas going into my MFJ 998 full auto tuner, 1500 watt auto tuner. It's fantastic. I love being able to just hit the antenna button and switch from antenna one to antenna two. I spoiled myself with this tuner. But it's amazing the differences between the dipole and the vertical. And sometimes like that station that you can barely make out, you switch to vertical and they're clear as day, you know? Yeah. So it is nice to have that option.
Yes, I'm with you on that. I wish I had my vertical back, but one day. Cool. All right. Well, the only last bit I wanted to kind of touch on just to wrap things up is that, you know, we tend to like try to bring attention to a lot of the modes and capabilities you can to our technician base. And I want to let people know that, you know, if you are a technician, this is some of the stuff you can do. I mean, in essence, it is available to you. And, you know, right now it might not be the place to do it in, but you can get self set up and try it out and, you know, get prepared to when the bands actually start to come back into, you know, season, because like right when the fall starts to kick in, you know, I remember getting out there doing a lot more FT8 because the conditions have changed and, you know, 10 all of a sudden starts to come a little bit alive more and people are starting to use it. And more so that, you know, when certain contests come about, it really doesn't matter what the propagation is. If there's a contest, guaranteed the band is going to be freaking alive. So, you know, pay attention to some of those contests just to make some contacts and start to get familiar with, you know, using some of your voice privileges on those, but more so on the digital side too. I mean, that there's no reason why you can't. You know, obviously CW is available to you everywhere, but, you know, digital modes are another alternative too as well. So So definitely we want to encourage you to go do that and start getting set up for that, and find somebody who can help you out with that, as we alluded to before. So I guess to try to put a bow on all this, any kind of last minute advice we want to throw at people who are maybe kind of teetering on the idea of digital, or been kind of poo-pooed upon when they mentioned to some of their club members, or in other forums that they've been in, and they just kind of shied away from it?
I would just recommend everyone just give it a shot. Try it. I mean, who knows? You may like it. I mean, I want to try everything in ham radio. Before I die, I'd like to make sure I can do it all and, see what I like. I don't know. I haven't done CW. Maybe haven't even attempted it. But at some point, I'd like to try it. Maybe I'll like it.
CW segment. Sorry.
What'd you say?
no practice CW segments. You can go somewhere else.
Yeah. No. People might like it. Like I said, if you're working from home and you got that itch. I mean, I did it for a year, especially during the whole COVID thing. I mean, FT8 was awesome because I was sitting at home. I was doing all my work and I could have my FT8 going. And like you said, you can just keep making contacts. And then by the end of the day, you're like, oh, wow, I got 60 contacts. That's pretty awesome. Yep. So yeah, but give it a shot.
I've new grids.
Don't be afraid.
Yeah. Good advice. How about you, Paul?
Yeah. Well, so yeah, just like Todd said, right? Don't be afraid. But like anything, all the various digital modes are just more tools that you can add to your arsenal. A lot of times, yes, they're frustrating as all get up to get going. But once you get it set up, usually most of the time it's effortless, and it just works. So it's worth a little bit of a hassle in getting it set up, just to have that tool in your arsenal, so that if you're sitting at home and, we've just had an M-class solar flare, and you've got an S7 noise floor, well, try digital, throw out some CQs and, or even just, give the program a minute to do some decodes, see what's out there, and you never know, right. It's just a good tool to have.
Yep. All right. Well, I agree with all of those. And I would say in the technical aspect of getting all of this stuff set up, obviously finding someone who's done it is going to be an invaluable resource for you. But if you're one of those stubborn types that just says, I got to learn it on my own, take your time, take one bit at a time, know that there are a lot of moving parts in all of it, and all of them have their own idiosyncrasies and ways to do certain things. And some of it's not always intuitive. A lot of it's counterintuitive in the thought process, but it made sense when it was designed that way. So just take your time with it. Ask a lot of questions in places that, you can, get people that want to support you in getting, those modes set up, and then get into it. And you might be surprised. Like we all said, you will find, you might be making contacts that you weren't able to do on voice or other modes. It might surprise you, and it might actually help if you, are one of those folks that like to work or hunt the awards, that can definitely get you to those goals much faster than trying to just, do one mode only, which, is an admirable approach, but very much an arduous slog sometimes to be able to get through. So it's all good there. And, if you got any, questions on your own that you run into, you can always head over to our Discord at Lit Free and Ham's website. At the bottom is our Discord link. Feel free to join. We've got a couple of channels there that you can jump in on, and we'd be glad to, help you out there any way we can. And if we can't help you, we'll point you in a direction to be able to get you the resources you need, so you can get on the air and start playing with those modes. And maybe one day, heck, we might make contact with you. So all good on all accounts there. So with that, if we're going to wrap things up tonight, as always, I appreciate everybody who is a part of the Live Free and Ham community. We've had a bunch of new people join our Discord. And so thank you guys for coming in and hanging out and saying hello. And we want to, help you out if you need it. Or, as always, if there's another, I just remember a conversation I had with another podcast, the Ham Radio Linux podcast that I've been chatting with Russ back and forth on and off. And so we've been making some good friends, and he's got a good podcast going on over there. So I'm going to check that out. which is always an alternative than the Windows world. You know, you can always get into Linux, and I'm sure they'll be just as helpful as us Windows people or Mac users or mix of both. So, you know, with that, as always, you know, if you haven't subscribed to our podcast community, I always say, you know, what's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you?
You know, that is my stance. And I'm going to say, you know, you should just press the button, come join us, come be part of the podcast, come be part of the community. You know, we love to have you. We always want to, you know, continue to spread the love and just hang out and meet new people, because we love doing this podcast and we do it for you guys. So as always, with that, you know, you can connect with our show a number of different ways. First and foremost, always, you can head over to livefreeham.com/shop, pick up some merch. Like I said, our digital life shirts available, as well as I speak several languages. And those are all in the storefront and available for purchase. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, you can always leave us a review on the iTunes. But if you're not an Apple Podcast user, we've made it wicked simple for you. You can head down into our show notes, and there's a little link there. You can text us and SMS and tell us how much you love to hate or hate to love us. Whatever the case, we'll love to read them, and we will share them on our next episode if there's anybody who wants to share a review with us. And as always, you can support our show monetarily through Patreon and buy us a beer links. And those are all located in our show notes and on our website. And if you want to reach any of our hosts, as always, you can contact us all off of livefreeandham.com. And as always, thanks for listening. And from all of us, from Live Free and Ham, 7-3.
7-3.
7-3, everyone.